Hello, listener. What you're about to hear is a What Are We Da Show patron unlock. This is material which our Patreon supporters have early access to. If you'd like to experience these episodes when they're at their freshest, become a What Are We Da Show patron today at patreon.com/WARUIDESHOU.
Well, now, we have quite the case here, don't we, you know, Cecil Dr. Watson? This quite perplexing and unusual anime, made with potentially questionable intent. I think we're going to need to examine this a bit closer. We're going to be on the case for quite some time. Sorry, I felt obligated to, you know, do some sort of comedic Sherlock impression on the way in on this one, folks. You know, it's required of a Z-list anime critic like me to do something as goofy as that. But, jokes aside, welcome, ladies, gentlemen, and MBs, to Wari Desho's second stream. This is our patron-first stream covering currently airing shows in a kind of similar manner to our mainline stream of thought, where we do full plot, summary, and analysis. But this is just the rump steak that is the analysis. There isn't going to be a great amount of talking about specific plot points. We're going to assume that you've already seen the episode. And unfortunately, you know, the boys, you know, that we covered last time in Given, they've gone on tour. They'll be back sometime in 2020. So we're just going to be covering something a little different this time. We're going to be talking about Kabuchiko Sherlock, case file number 221, if I'm not mistaken. Which,
okay, I think you've already done it. I think you... I think we might have already mispronounced...
whatever.
The K word.
Kabuchiko. Oh, Kabuki. Yeah, yeah. Krispy Kreme. Krispy Kreme.
I do it all the time too. Kabukicho. 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 I have to, like, I've wrote it down phonetically.
I'm just gonna roll that. I mean, I mispronounce Sueniyama's name millions of times in the Given podcast. I think it's one of my, like, you know, running gags I don't even realize I'm doing. But yes, we're back to cover this one, case 221, Kabuchiko Sherlock. Hopefully there aren't 220 cases that we have to watch beforehand in order to get caught up on the plot. But anyway, I'm Shaden, and joining me as always, you know, from across the pond but close to my heart, is the Subtle Doctor.
Hey everyone, what's going on? We're going to be talking about mysteries.
There's plenty of mysteries about this show, that's for sure.
And a detective guy who is a genius, but also a dick and socially awkward. Something we've never seen before in television.
Hey, you know what? That sounds like something I'm going to describe myself as on Tinder. Genius, but kind of a dick and socially awkward. It's true. Like, you know. So, Kabuchiko Sherlock, this was picked out by our patrons, and if you in turn want to be involved in, you know, deciding what shows we cover, getting some questions to us, talking to us on Discord, you can even request your own shows to cover, then feel free to consider becoming a patron for as little as $2 a month. Plenty of perks involved with it, so do feel free to have a look at that. All right, so, since this is Stream of... Stream of Thought. Well, it's not Stream of Thought, rather. It's Second Stream. We are going to dive right into the discussion rather than going into deep plot summary. All I'll say is that the moment is that if you, you know about Sherlock Holmes in general as a character...
And who doesn't at this point?
Well, that's something I'll talk about in a bit. But, like, if you know, that's fine. But if you don't, you don't need to really know that much either. This show is not so heavily steeped in the Sherlock mythos that it brings over every single little detail. They are certainly doing some of their own things with it, which I appreciate. But we'll come into that more in a moment. So, Doc, do you want to lead off, or shall I? Because I've got plenty to talk about. Also expect Angry Shaden to get uncorked a little bit here and there.
Well, just a little quick note. People may or may not know. I certainly didn't know till a few moments ago that Kabukicho is an actual real life district in Japan, and it's a bit seedy. Is seedy the right word? There's a lot of activities that go on of questionable legality.
Like playing Yu-Gi-Oh in the streets.
Exactly. So when I read, why does her name escape me? I'm so terrible for not remembering Caitlin Moore's name. When I was reading her write-up on this episode on Anime Feminist, she's the one who tipped me off to that. And so I thought that was an interesting detail. But so I should put my biases on the table, though, before we start talking about this show, and say that I am not really a mystery guy. I've never really been drawn to the genre. Like, if someone was trying to sell me on something, right, and they were like, first and foremost, it is a mystery, it's a murder mystery or a whodunit, that never really did anything for me. Which is, it's funny because my favorite video game ever is Persona 4, which is ostensibly a murder mystery game. However,
I may say, Doc, did you appreciate Yu Narukami's return in this?
Oh, was
you know what I'm saying? It looks exactly like him.
He dyed his hair, and he became
he finally used Just for Men.
Exactly. Yeah, he got on that. Shouts to you, Yu. But yeah, so P4 is a murder mystery, but that's never really how I would describe the game to someone if I was doing an elevator pitch, and it's not really kind of what hooked me about it. There's so much else going on. Like, I'm fine if there's like a mystery as a sort of secondary element to a story, like Banana Fish, right? I mean, when I think of Banana Fish, I don't think of a mystery, but like there's a big mystery being unraveled throughout a large part of that show about what is the banana fish and where is it from and who's using it for what purposes. But like there's other stuff in the story to kind of keep you interested. But here the mystery really is front and center, mostly. At least that's how it is in a lot of Sherlock stuff. And that's not like the most compelling thing ever for me.
Well, the examples you brought up, both of Persona 4 and Banana Fish, they actually function similarly in that the mysteries of, you know, the murder Zenobia and, of course, the Banana Fish drug, they're really just things that you drape the characters over. Like, they're just a framework for things to be hung on. And what you're touching on here is something I'm going to address in one of my own talking points specifically about this show later. But it is fair, even if you're not a mystery person necessarily, then question, you know, okay, if we're getting a mystery here or not, what's the point of the show? Like, what is it trying to be about? Put that in your, you know, in your headspaces for a little bit, folks. That'll be relevant later.
Yeah, so I guess me giving this preamble is just to say, like, if I seem less than super enthused about this kind of thing, it's really a personal taste issue more than, you know, me sort of looking at it the way that someone who's a mystery lover might and kind of judging it the same way. So just something to keep in mind. But like, I guess if we're going to talk about the criticism of the episode, the analysis, there's sort of two big buckets I put everything into, and they're sort of, one is labeled LGBTQ and the other is labeled the rest of the stuff.
I've got my own bucket as well, which is violence against women. God, I love that stuff.
Oh, you're right. Yeah.
I'm bringing my own one there. And sure, I've got other buckets as well. Like, this is like, you know, complete cleanup here. Not that I think that this show thus far, insofar as episode one is concerned, is completely, you know, utterly a write-off.
No.
But
I don't think so either.
But there's a lot of question marks over it, and for a mystery show, you'd think that'd be appropriate, but they're not the right kind of questions one should be asking at this point. Let's put it that way, we'll be covering in a moment.
Yeah, and just to like maybe like say something genuinely positive right from the off and kind of without caveats, I had a good time, I think, with the episode, with the 22 minutes on offer or so. All things considered, I thought you could accurately rather describe this as a mostly fun kind of romp. And it was quite colorful. There were things I enjoyed about the way that it looked.
Oh, yes.
And, you know, I think your grimaces there are either about the LGBT stuff, which we will talk about, and which I was prepped for. So I kind of was ready for that blow. And if you watched it, and if you were not ready for that, I could see it blindsiding you and kind of completely ruining your enjoyment of the episode. But expectations were kind of set for me. So I was like ready to compartmentalize all that stuff and then kind of try to look at the rest of it and see what else I could find. And like, and again, like mysteries, right? I mean, are mysteries supposed to be the kind of thing that you as an audience member can solve? Or are they supposed to be the kind of thing where it's insoluble to you and you wait for the genius to kind of do the things you can't do with information that only he or she or they have and like then put the pieces together? This is a thing that I've always struggled with. And, you know, in Sherlock stories, it really does kind of seem to be mostly leaning toward the latter. There's not a lot I as an audience member can do to like really solve this mystery given the limited information I have. So I don't know. So that's, I guess, kind of what makes it a little bit less fun. But if I just kind of like, okay, turn that part of your brain off, Doc, and like just kind of watch, you know, Sherlock is Sherlock. He's a character you either love or hate. I mean, he is, they kind of nailed the sort of modern, like, Benedict Cumberbatchian, like, fucking
I'll say this for this show, right? If nothing else, it has one thing definitely over the Stephen Moffat Sherlock, which is that we don't, thankfully, don't see, although it is kind of his own way of doing it, like, we see something that to me is much more visually interesting than just having Benedict Cumberbatch, like, you know, send word art across the screen with, like, waving his hands.
Yes, do math like John Nash on a window, yeah, right?
That was some ridiculous shit. Okay, so
oh boy.
I'm just going to put my credentials on the table as well a little bit here. Now, I've actually read some of the Sherlock Holmes stories, but not many of them. The ones that I have read that you will be probably most interesting, most interesting in talking about is, of course, Scandal in Bohemia, which introduces Irene Adler, who, in Sherlock-like canon across the years and all the various incarnations of the character, both as a standalone character and a, you know, in films and fiction and whatnot, like, she's been massively overexposed relative to her presence in the book, which was one book that was, like, maybe 60 pages long. But nonetheless, that story I really like because it was, you know, Sherlock gets one-upped in that one by her. And the rest I had read, I haven't read the big ones, like, you know, for example, The Hound of the Baskervilles, or whichever one, you know, Sherlock and Moriarty end up, you know, taking a bungee cordless jump over the Reichenbach Falls. But the thing that I noticed when I read a lot of the Sherlock stories is that, as you say, like, there isn't a lot for the reader's grip onto as far as details and such, like, where you feel like you could potentially solve the mystery ahead of time. And I am one of those people that I think that that is what makes a mystery appealing. But that said, like, I understand why they were created at the time, because I think that, like, Arthur Conan Doyle, who wrote them, like, he was very much of the opinion that logic and reason and induction were, you know, the tools of the sane and rational man. And the way that it's certainly framed, which is replicated in this show, is that we don't, of course, operate from inside Sherlock's mind. We see him presented through the perspective of John Watson. And Watson, of course, you know, pontificates many times about Sherlock's various eccentricities, but also his brilliance and questions like how he could come up, you know, to it. Sherlock himself, like, you know, trusts Watson's own deduction. Beyond that, my only other real experience with Sherlock is Basil the Green Mouse Detective.
That's yeah. a super one. I
Persona,
love that movie.
Persona 4, because let's face it, Naoto Kuragane is basically Sherlock's, you know, of that particular franchise. And the first Guy Ritchie Sherlock film starring Robert Downey Jr., which was actually a lot... That is a fun film, you know.
Cool. I have not seen it. Have you... Yeah. So you didn't watch House either?
I haven't seen House, no. I really should do.
I don't know if you should do. I didn't really enjoy it that much, but... Hey,
I did see one episode where House decided what he would do was wheel in a coma patient and then, you know, say, well, he's staying here for, like, you know, several years. That's all a good reason for us to get a giant flat screen TV or something in this hospital ward. Like, you know, yeah, you know, a lot of programs on for coma patients, let's put it that way. But the reason I bring all that up is for a couple of points. First off, I think it's fair to say that short of maybe, I don't know, Harry Potter, Jesus, and God knows what else. Like, Sherlock Holmes is probably one of the most recognizable, like, characters in fictional works, like, across...
Goku. Don't forget Goku.
Goku, yeah.
Kamehameha, you know. It's, yeah. People know.
Even if you've never read a Sherlock story, the odds are very, very good that you at least have a passing knowledge of the key components of the Sherlock mythos, of like Sherlock canon. You've got Watson, you've got Holmes, you've got Moriarty, Adler, so on and so forth.
The stupid hat, the stupid magnifying hat, glass.
Yeah. Elementary, which, my dear Watson. Yeah.
The magnifying glass was not used in this, sadly.
Mm-hmm.
No. Though I don't think Cumberbatch uses it either, to be fair.
No, he just, you know, like I say, he just puts in, you know, his word art in there, and with whooshing noises and whatnot.
It's too funny. It's so
how
dumb.
How can anyone say that shit seriously? So the reason
I watched all of it. I watched all of it.
You fool. So the reason I bring that up, and indeed all the stuff that we haven't watched collectively between us, such like, you know, as the Benedict Cumberbatch one, or even like Elementary, for example, or any of the many films or such a producer, like Holmes is a character that has seen adaptation into many, many different works and many different styles, and works in turn that have their own purposes and intents, like the Guy Ritchie one, you know. Yeah, we get the investigative stuff in it, and it pays lip service to a lot of Holmes' attributes, like the fact that he's a boxer and whatnot, you know. But it's just a fun popcorn flick. It's not like, you know, mm-hmm. deep intellectual exercise. So that has its own worth, of course. So I'm bringing that up now because I have to say that I am very, very confused as to what the purpose of this particular show is. Because I can't tell if it's meant to be a comedy, a mystery, or, like, you know, a grim, gritty crime drama, or some sort of strange blend in between.
Yeah.
I'm going to elaborate on that more in a bit, but I think that this show has some very serious tone problems. Mainly because of one particular thing, and this... yeah. Which I'll get into.
The scene at the end, you mean?
No. Well, no. It's, of course, the violence. What happens to the lady.
Yeah, okay.
Because this... we'll get into that in detail in a bit, because it also ties in, funnily enough, to the story in which this episode actually takes some elements of, which is a study in Scarlet. The fingernail writing, for example, in Blood, is something that was taken as an element from that story. Although the differences are only in the very superficial, like, attributes like that, rather than the meat of it. Although Study in Scarlet also was the first Holmes novel ever written, and serves as Watson's introduction to Holmes as well, which is replicated in this episode. So, there's that. I didn't really care that much for the stories in the end, because I felt they kind of got a bit repetitive in terms of, oh, Holmes, however did you crack it? And for me, I think that Sherlock, like, as a show or as a work of fiction, I think one of the things that I find a bit problematic with it is it seems to really be appealing to people who take a kind of snootish, vicarious arrogance. Who're like, look at how smart we are. Like, you know, look how smart I can be, you know, by emulating Sherlock's ways, which isn't really how it should be because he has his own eccentricities and stuff.
And he's mostly a person you wouldn't want to emulate in a lot of the kind of modern takes on him anyway. They really lean into the dickishness and, you know, we'll keep you around and tolerate your awful, you know, borderline abusive behavior, because you get results, and that is I don't know, not a thing that I find like super entertaining. I'm not gonna sit here and be like, "Oh, problematic, you shouldn't watch it," or whatever, but it just doesn't appeal to me.
Yeah. And the second thing I want to bring up is this, like, because Holmes is such a well-known character in all of light literary canon, inevitably, when you make an adaptation that references even, you know, Sherlock even slightly, it brings its baggage with it, you know, brings, like, expectations and ideas, things that you already know. So obviously, you know, when we go into this show and it's a Sherlock one, we expect a mystery story, we expect Watson to turn up, we expect this and that. Now, for my part, when it comes to adapting Sherlock Holmes, or indeed anything that famous, I don't care what you choose to do, what you choose to keep, or what you choose to cut. It has to maintain some, like, you know, parity to the original. Like, you can't suddenly, for example, have Sherlock be, I don't know, a fucking octopus or some shit. Then again, he was a mouse, so who am I to argue? But, you know, it has to have a semblance to the original, otherwise there's no point in adapting in the first place. But that said, I'm also really not that arse if you decide to do something like, say in a different country or a different time period, as it does here, or you choose not to include certain characters from the canon, such as Irene Adler, who I believe is not going to be in the show because there's no entry for her on the Mal page. Could be wrong on that, of course, we're only episode one. So, for me, like, if there's one thing I'm not going to complain about, I'm not going to be like, you know, going, well, actually, it was different in the original Conan Doyle books. This is wrong. No, no, my OCD. No, I'm not going to do that. I'm much more interested in the new things you do. And it does do some new things I think are interesting and neat. They're just in the service of some really, really questionable shit.
Uh-huh. And you know, we don't have to worry about that too much this time because it's, you know, I mean, yes, like, it's a take on some very famous fiction, but it is an original take, I guess. Like, it's not an adaptation of a manga or a light novel, and so we don't have to, like, directly compare. There's no sort of other iteration of Kabukicho, case file, lowercase n, superscript o, 221. Like, this is the one. And so, yeah, we don't have that. And we usually, I mean, the last time we had that was, maybe I shouldn't. It's that anime that must not be named.
Oh,
it's the
no.
last original anime we covered on a weekly basis. So
Nope.
Yeah, that's, yeah. So where would you like to, where do you want to start here?
I'm going to get right into the nasty stuff just so I can get it out of the way.
Okay.
Big concept warning here, folks, for depictions of sexual violence towards women. Incredibly intimate sexual violence towards women. What could, I don't know if it's the necessarily the, fits the strictest definition of the term, but what could arguably be called female genital mutilation? Classy. Great. So, okay,
So I don't have a problem with that.
I do, and here's the thing, right? I don't have a problem.
Let me first contextualize.
Please do.
No. What I mean is, obviously, IRL, I have a huge problem with it. But in terms of, like, in the fiction, you have a criminal, a copycat killer here. Trying to emulate the murder of Jack the Ripper, and he has, you know, killed someone who works at a host bar, and the thing that he's done is, well, mutilate, like you said, the genital area. But, like, so all this is, like, not really being endorsed by the show. It's like a crime. You know, it's done by clearly a person who, is a bad criminal man who needs help, who needs to go to jail. It's, I don't know, these are kind of par for the course of murder mysteries. You have kind of grisly killings, right?
Well, here's the thing, right? I'm not against the inclusion of such graphic violence just simply because that's what it is. I hope that that's, if you've been following the show for a long time, that you have the idea that I've got a bit more nuance to my opinion than that.
We are reviewing Vinland Saga.
This is true. So I don't have a problem with it simply because it is what it is. I have a problem with its execution and its use here. And this goes into the idea of tone I mentioned. like, this woman, this lady, who I believe is perhaps Lestrade's sister, unless I am completely misunderstanding.
Yeah, that's correct. Yeah.
So while Lestrade has no reactions to the fact that his sister is not only dead, but has also been violated in one of the most graphic ways imaginable, that's questionable. I don't get that. But
was Lestrade the toupee-wearing individual?
Yes.
Okay, I wasn't clear on if that was
he
him.
He was there, and his reaction was, bro.
Bro.
Pretty much. So I don't get that. That's a bit odd. But Lestrade, by the way, I should mention, is of course a recurring Holmes character in his own right. So he's clearly been brought into this particular world for a reason, insofar as like the adaptation is concerned. Lestrade, like, historically, like, Lestrade has either been portrayed as being, like, you know, the how did you do it, Holmes, kind of, like, foil, the one who always asks those questions. He represents the police in pretty much every, like, you know, story he appears in, rather than being a private detective here. Or he could sometimes be, you know, the bumbling idiot who's like, oh, by dear God, Holmes, how ever do you do it? Like, that kind of thing.
And like, he's a cop here as well, right?
I think he's either a cop. I think he is one of the actual cops, not a private detective. I apologize. I think it's just not made entirely clear. But so there's that, which I find troubling. But there's a wider issue of this. No one has a strong reaction to what they see here. With like the only person I would argue, or the only two people I'd argue who shouldn't, like, you know, be reviled by this, are probably Sherlock, because Sherlock is an eccentric who is disconnected from other people. So obviously he wouldn't find this, like, you know, repulsive or distasteful, because that's just how he operates. And Watson, because Watson himself is a doctor, so this is probably something, well, not strictly the same thing that he's seen all the time, but rather he has, you know, dealt with injuries and such before. By the way, Watson being a doctor, like, as in a medical doctor, that is a carryover again from the books. But
yeah, they don't talk about that much.
Yeah,
until the end.
But what they don't carry over, but as far as I can tell, is the fact that Watson also served in the army. In fact, in Study in Scarlet, when he's actually coming back from a war in which he was injured in, which is why he's usually depicted wearing using a cane.
Mm-hmm.
But again, I'm okay with that. You don't need to carry over every single, you know, thing that defines a character from its original source material. If something has to go because it doesn't make sense or isn't necessary anymore, jettison it. I'm all for that. So back to this. No one has a strong reaction to this. And this entire investigation is brought about as a kind of like race or like, you know, a competition hosted by, what was the cat club, I think it was. Like the hostess
Pipe Cat.
Of the cat. Yeah, Pipe Cat Club. The hostess of Pipe Cat Club, whose name eludes me at the moment. And it's treated as if, though, like, it were a game. And to me, I would find, or like, I would believe that, you know, a place like Kabuchiko, which is, you know, like, full of sex workers, like, that's what the trade of disrepute you talked about before was. Personally, I don't have a problem with it, by the way. Like, you know, but you'd think that if there was a killer going around doing this graphic, awful stuff to the women, you know, who do that kind of work, that this would have everyone on edge. It would be really, really, you know, concerning. And that they would treat it seriously rather than as a game. But no one, like, finds this incredibly violent and horrific acts, like, in any way distasteful? Like, what is the tone trying to be here? Why have that incredibly violent act be the thing that happens to this woman if, you know, you're not ultimately going to work with it and use it for it? Like, she could have just been left dead when she banged her head on the cabinet after the guy threw her down. Like, the whole, like, you know, idea of, like, her being mutilated in such a way, that wasn't in Study in Scarlet. Like, the victim in Study in Scarlet was a man for a start, and he still didn't have his genitals chopped off. So this is something new, and yes, it is related to Jack the Ripper, which I also find a bit curious, because Jack the Ripper, yes, fictionalized and mythologized though he is, was a real person. So we're kind of crossing over things a little bit here in terms of what's fiction and what's not. To the point where if you said to me, oh, they put Jack the Ripper in because Jack the Ripper was, like, you know, the one person who never got caught was a mass murderer, and who could possibly foil him if he were real but Sherlock Holmes? Like, I'd probably buy that. Because to me, again, I feel like we're crowing things here without really considering their implications. Mm-hmm. That's what I find really problematic about it. Like, again, don't have an issue with this being in here, like, if it was used appropriately. Indeed, I think that, you know, there's actually a potential for a really powerful story here about how the police don't want to help these workers at all, or the workers don't want to turn to them. If you've seen Ollie Fawn's video on sex workers, then this is where I'm going with it. Because, you know, police violence and, you know, towards sex work is a well-known thing. So there's your setup for why they have private detectives do all this for them, because the police can't or won't help them or will actively, you know, harm them. But I don't understand how you can have such, like, a light, preppy, you know, like, jazzy kind of, like, look to the show and also sound and feel to it, while also saying, oh yeah, by the way, she had her, you know, genitals chopped off. It seems like complete and utter overkill.
Hmm. Well, so, as far as the reactions to it, I think the only other people in the room are seasoned detectives, right? Neat Freak Detective and the former cop.
But what about the cat club owner, the Pipe Cat Club? Like, she puts them on the case to look at this murder,
right? But, yes.
No. Like, and here's the thing, right? As much as you say, like, that they there have no reaction to it because they're hardened detectives, I get that. But maybe it would have behooved the show to, like, you know, put something in that gives us the perspective of someone who might think that this is as awful as it is.
Yeah, and even despite seasoning and experience, like, it's still pretty grisly, you know. I mean, I guess, but I don't know. I mean, maybe just murder scenes start to lose that connection when you solve murders for a living. I don't know. That didn't really strike me in the same way. I didn't have an issue with it. As far as, like, you know, okay, here's a really grisly murder. I suppose the idea of a very sort of kind of silly, happy Pipe Cat Club game showification of murder mystery solving, like, those two things, you could be like, okay, this juxtaposition doesn't sit well with me. But I think the juxtaposition of, you know, solving murders and scoring points, like making it, kind of gamifying it, is meant to be a little off kilter and unsettling. And it's meant to be like, you know, this is Kabuchiko.
Yes. I firstly got to say, like, when you, you know, there's a reason that Blue's Clues doesn't have, like, you know, grisly murder. Mm-hmm. Where, you know, Blue loses, his paw or something like that. Like, we've solved Blue's Clues. We found out why this man got his head blown off. There's a reason for that. Like, that's why I'm trying to say. But the second
thing is, we found a clue. It's the paw print on a severed head.
Oh, my God. So, I get where you're coming from, but, like, if that is Kabuchiko, like, bear in mind, this is a big thing here as well I need to lead into here. Let's talk about John Watson, right? Watson is the POV character in all of the Sherlock stories. He's the one who, like, you know, filters through his own, like, Sherlock as a person to us. Like, you know, he's our lens, our narrator. And he similarly serves as our lens into Kabuchiko here. I probably mispronounced that again, I apologize. So...
It's okay.
So why is the only nonplussed reaction he has to anything that he sees in this at, you know, the club owner and the women that come in there?
Yeah.
Like,
this is a big
point. If they wanted to, I can understand, like, in fact, this is, again, like, something where you turn this into a strength, where if everyone's so just, like, disconnected from this violence because they're just used to it, because this is what Kabuchiko is like, fine. That's great. But you need something to contrast it with. And you have a character whose entire existence in the canon you have taken him from is to do that. And you don't do anything with that.
Yeah, Watson kind of sucks right now. I'm just going to say that. He kind of sucks.
Yeah, that's the thing that gets me. Like, you have a gift-wrapped opportunity here to build on what you've got without actually taking away too much of the light-hearted nature of the show. But also to, you know, point out that, like, hey, you know, this violence that everyone's desensitized to, this awful thing, like, maybe we shouldn't be? Like, can we not have, like, him as the audience POV, like, react in a way that he's like, oh, good God, as opposed to, well, you know, the cervix was cut off. I mean, I think one of our patrons actually said to me, I bet that he could very well be Jack the Ripper, Watson. Oh. because because of how poorly he reacts to this whole thing.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, he right now he's just there to be like, "What? You solved the mystery? Explain it." But like, you kind of, I mean, sort of don't even need him there for that because Watson does this Rakugo, which I guess we'll talk about. But yeah, I'm not a great big fan of his yet. I'm not 100% sure what he brings, but I, you know, that's to be determined, you know, that's, yeah. He's a, as much as you say that you don't really need to bring things with Sherlock, if you don't have Watson, you kind of fucked up. You kind of got to Watson.
Yeah, and I do think that he is serving the purpose that, you know, he serves in the regular Conan Doyle books, which is as the audience POV. It's just that his reactions are... they're so limp to everything, with, again, the exception of how he feels towards the women of the club, which is its own can of worms.
So, yeah. Do you want to talk about that now, or do you want to talk about Rakugo? Where do we go from here?
I'll just finish up by saying, like, I, again, don't have an issue... necessarily with using extreme violence against women or anyone or anything else. It's like I said in the Shield Hero cast, write about whatever the fuck you want, but have a good reason for putting it in there in the first place and try and take a step back to consider how it might read. I mean, like I say, with a couple of rewrites and a couple of tweaks, you could have literally taken the exact same setup and built on that to show, oh, you know what? Like, we can't go to the police because they don't trust sex workers. And that's why we have this system in place that, you know, gamifies and all that and allows them to go out to clubs and get, like, you know, free booze and stuff while they're solving the grisly murder of someone who had her genitals cut off. Like, this is, again, why I'm confused about what the show is meant to be about. Like, is it meant to be lighthearted? Because if it is, then I find that difficult to swallow, given the fact that, you know, we have the opening murder of the entire show is, oh yeah, she had her vagina cut off. Great. Classy. Love it. But then if you're trying to then, you know, go, oh, well, you know, it's meant to be a grisly bird, it's meant to be dark in nature. Look at the rest of the show. What does it want to say? What is its tone? What is it trying to get across? I'm not saying that shows can't have multiple tones, but it has to have at least something that's recognizable. I have no fucking clue what to make of this, other than just to say, again, like, it feels like, you know, what happens, like, when I complain about Diebuster, for example. Oh, here's this attempted rape scene. Why is that in there? Because that's just the thing we know that happens to women, so we put that in there, as opposed to careful consideration of doing it. And that's why I say that you could simply have cut that out entirely. The only thing I can think of that you're trying to do with that was, oh, we want to, you know, pay homage to Study in Pink. Benedict Cumberbatch does Study in Scarlet with the long fingernail and the scraping of the blood. To which I'd say, you don't need to, you know, cut someone's, you know, genitals off in order to get blood out of them if you want to do that. You know, I'm not even a doctor, but I know that. What the fuck? That's all I gotta say.
Good knowledge. Yeah, I mean, valid. I do hear where you're coming from. I think tonally the show, I think what it was going for, and perhaps it's sort of so madcap that it may seem like a little bit more of a pinball machine than it really is. I want to say it's going for sort of a tone sandwich, like the idea of fun and zany on the front end and the back end to make the brutality of the mystery and the murder kind of easier to swallow. And kind of drape everything in fun colors and a bouncy OST. But the problem is I hated the zany part so much. Mm-hmm. Like, they really, the beginning and the end, like, by the end, like, I was kind of into the Holmes, like, solving the mystery. And it happened really quickly. Like, they didn't draw anything out, which is a thing that I dislike in these stories. And they were wrapping it up. It's like, okay, this was kind of a nice, neat little package here once we got past some of the grossness. And then, pow, he gets hit by a fucking car.
that Watson is driving.
So fucking stupid.
I mean, the one good joke of that is, I suppose, at least there was a doctor on the scene.
Hey, I know. And then, okay, so I'm dense, by the way. Like, what the fuck was happening at the end? Like, when he brought in a penis-shaped flower pot?
That was basically so that he could pee. He was going to, you know, the ending joke of this episode was that Watson is going to have to help Sherlock pee because he's in a cast.
Why the fuck is Sherlock so... I guess he's just an eccentric weirdo. I don't know. Like, why
does
he...
Well, no, he's... Pass?
I don't understand why he's so, like...
I don't understand.
Horrified by it.
I don't understand. That's, like, the free word review of this entire episode for me. I mean...
Right.
God, I'm going to need a detective to figure this shit out.
I know. So, well, okay. I have a thing. Just a quick thing. You know, so I guess with your criticisms the murder, made me think of, like, so is this show guilty of misogyny? And you could have a point re the murder, and it's a point that people like me will, like, kind of debate and push back on. But, like, what do you think about... and I know... Look, I know Sherlock is supposed to be a dick, but, like, his sort of hands-on examination of the hostess in The White Rose. What did you... Did that... how did that make you feel? Did that make you a little uncomfortable? It made me a little uncomfortable, I have to say.
I again have to ask, what's the point of it?
He's a fucking genius, man. He could smell her, and then he could tell you that she had plastic surgery.
here's the thing, though, Doc, right? I, again, don't have an issue with this in principle if it's being used to illustrate that Holmes himself is just that kind of eccentric, who doesn't understand people, doesn't know boundaries, crosses lines, all that kind of stuff. But look at how the other detectives were acting. Oh, yeah, we're on this murder mystery, but we have, like, you know, a free bar tab. Okay. Like, what's worse here? That Holmes, like, you know, roasts this poor woman by pointing out how the plastic surgery she's had because he himself is just a bit kooky. Or the fact that, oh, we're all going here just to, you know, have a fun time with these women and, you know, mate with the free bar when we're also dealing with this horrific murder, which again goes back to the tone issue I've got. Like, that's the thing that I thought was strange about that. Like, the way this should be written, in my opinion, is everyone just looks and goes, whoa, dude, like, cut that shit out. But no one offers a counter-narrative to that. Like, they're all doing their own thing, which in its own way is a bit shitty, to be quite honest. So...
the case
was just
joint.
I was just more confused than anything. I didn't find it funny, for a start.
No, that's the thing, is, like, I didn't find it funny either, and I don't know if you're meant to. Like, I don't think the point was to make you uncomfortable, but I just made me feel uncomfortable and made me go, like, well, here's a dick, Sherlock. He's not, like, a dick to Watson, really. I mean, he's sort of distant and everything with him, but he really, like, crosses the line. This hostess, and I think it's because the show, like you were saying, at least in this episode, kind of subconsciously doesn't really think that that sex workers and people and that work in hostess bars and whatnot are to be respected in the
maybe
same way.
Maybe don't set your show in a place that is actually real, you know, that is known for being out of sex work. This is like saying, you know, like, oh, I'm going to write a crime drama where it's going to be about nuns in Amsterdam. Fuck's sake, guys, come on.
Now, if he does it to, like, you know, a cop who's a lady, a straight lady who's, like, a wealthy, powerful, then I'll, you know, eat my words here, I guess. But yeah, so far the list is, you know, one hostess lady, and I got a feeling that that's the clientele that we'll mostly be working with, and that we'll mostly be having boundaries crossed upon them by the supposed good guys, right?
Great start when you struggle to see the difference between the good and the bad, only because one is so extremely on the other end. But I, again, like, this is a thing that I find in so many shows I'm starting to have disagreements with, like I had with Shield Hero, which is beyond, like, the moral reprehensiveness or the ethical reprehensiveness or just how it made me feel. Like, why? Why is it there? I would understand its presence and accept the the taste it left in my mouth if, for example, like Watson served his function in that scene and reacted to it with, like, dude, what are you doing? But no, nothing. He didn't. It just is there and whatever. Okay, fine. Jesus Christ. All right. Okay. Do you want to move on to talk about the other big elephant in the room?
Let's do it.
All right. So, Doc, do you think this show is transphobic and or queerphobic?
I have to say there's certainly ample evidence to support that claim. By the first episode.
Yep.
That is for sure.
I mean, I'm just going to point this out. I am currently in the process of writing up a script for a podcast on Tokyo Godfathers. And bear in mind, Tokyo Godfathers, like, is a film featuring many different characters and lots of, like, little vignettes and stories in it. And Hannah, you know, she similarly works in a similar kind of club, doing a similar kind of thing, you know, singing as a crossdresser. She is treated with so much more dignity and in her depiction, like, just as a regular, normal person than anyone that appears in this show. And this is like, and you know, like, Hannah was just one of three characters. It wasn't like, you know, it was entirely about her and the world that she lived in prior to becoming homeless. This is again why I have to ask why, because if you're just going to set it in Kabuchiko, but then only seem to, like, you know, make everyone go, you know, all of the queer or trans people there, why? Is that just because you yourself as a writer are queerphobic or transphobic? In which case, kindly, you know, fuck off. I mean, here's the thing as well, right? And this is where, funnily enough, the Sherlock Holmes baggage comes back into it. Again, Watson is our POV character. He is the lens into the world of Sherlock Holmes. And in this instance, he is the lens of the world for the world of Kabuchiko. Now, his reaction to pretty much all of the women that he meets here, queer or not, trans or not, is, well, like he's suddenly having a gag, like, acid reflux attack. And I'm like, okay.
Watson? Do you mean all the ones he meets in the Pipe Cat or just in the show?
All of them. I mean,
there's
I
one recall- at the end who's in a Letterman jacket that he takes a shine to.
Mm-hmm.
Because, of course, you know, she is stereotypically sort of presented as a straight lady.
I don't know. We'll find out about her later. Maybe she is Adler. Who knows? I doubt it's Adler, though, because I don't recall Adler ever having a thing for Watson. Maybe Mary Watson, you know, personally.
Yes, it's Mary.
could be. I don't know. We'll find out. They wouldn't obviously put that in there if it wasn't important, but then again, this show's, like, you know, understanding of what isn't as important is a bit, you know, suspect. So, on the one hand, you've got the way Watson, you know, views them, which is, oh, good God, like, you know, I'm constantly sweating bullets around these people. And then the show itself has its depiction of them, which is very, like, I think the main problem I have with it is not like, for example, like the, say, you know, the musical number at the start where we get to see that lady in, you know, various outfits, including, you know, the what's the sweater call with a side boob on. I don't know.
Right.
I recognize that. Like, that in itself is not a problem, but what I think I have an issue with is the way that it just treats all of them as, like, people who don't understand boundaries or space.
Yeah. Miss Hudson, that, by the way, is the name
Miss
of
Hudson,
the lady.
There we
you're
go. Miss Hudson, yeah.
But you're totally, like, right. You're so right about this.
Yeah. That, I think, is the problem here. Not in how they look or how, like, you know, it has that, like, quirky musical number. Those in themselves can be fine. But, like, again, I go back to Tokyo Godfathers. You know what Hannah didn't do? Violate personal space.
Yeah. And it would be. So I guess, you know, you could see the argument. The counter argument to what you're saying, like, well, some drag queens are like this, or some trans people are like this, or cross dressers are like this. But like, so, like, the vast majority of them in this episode are presented in this way with these very masculine bodies and facial hair. It's not like
maybe the exception is the bowl hair one who like says like sorry.
Yeah. The tiny one. Push. But they're not presented. There's no sort of diversity of types. It's really like so mostly this. It's these, and there's not a differentiation really of I mean, we don't know. Are they drag queens? Are they trans people? Are they a mix? I don't know.
I don't think the writers know. I don't think they care.
It's just kind of, an amalgam of, like, stereotypes. Like, turned up to 11. And like you said, they're very boundary crossing with Watson, who we have a counter example. It's not like this is a thing of his around women. He sees the redhead at the end and blushes and is like, oh, yeah, I'm into this. It's just that these people are not straight or cis. And, you know, this is sort of the gift that keeps on giving, so to speak, the curse that keeps on cursing, because they get out of Pipe Cat Club and they find Matsun and Norio.
Oh, good God.
The neat freak detective. And, you know, again, a counter argument could be deployed here where you'd be like, well, it's just PDA that the guys are not into and they leave. But there just seems to be a bit more of the ooh gross about this.
That's exactly
normal.
What that scene is. Because if it was just the case that, you know, oh, we've got the wrong couple because, oh, he's with a guy. Like, they leave while we hear the dialogue of them two embrace each other and doing this very camp, like, Matsu, and all this, like, you know, very, very hyperactive kind of way. And that's the point they choose to leave. Not as far as, like, the scene is constructed, because they're, oh, God, we've got the wrong people. I mean, let me ask you this, right? If you replace that guy, one of the two guys, with a girl, made it a heterosexual relationship, and left the dialogue exactly the same, would that then, like, work as a joke? Like, in that sense?
Right. Yeah, it wouldn't be... It would not be written that way, because it's... the joke is not as quote-unquote funny.
Yeah, I should stress by why I don't believe that is funny at all. I'm just trying to work from the perspective of the creators here, because
totally.
that's the way that reads to me. It's like when I point out in, well, Frank's, like, oh, look, there's the dialogue over this scene. Like, and you know, scenes aren't constructed in vacuums from the individual elements. Like, you have cohesive meaning from different elements. So when you've got them doing that in the background and the rest of, like, the cops, all of them are sweating bullets, whereas you'd think, like, the rank and file officers wouldn't give two shits because they're not the ones whose careers are on the line for, you know, accusing the wrong person. I mean, call me crazy here. Or even call me, like, you know, just...
okay, crazy.
Call me, like, you know, over-exaggerating here. But for those of you at home, if you've listened to my Akeekan podcast, I was getting vibes of that. Because there's that fucker who, like, you know, molests men in that show. Yeah, that's a thing that happens in the Keek, and a show about soda cans. Great. Thanks for that. And he bursts in through the door, like, to, you know, like, try and have his way with Kakeru. And I got a vibe with that with the detectives there, including Lestrade. Like, you know, oh, look at this, what's going on here? And also, funnily enough, Akeekan also features a trans, like, you know, club owner in that.
Yeah.
Which is also similarly treated pretty, you know, badly by the show's depiction. So, when I'm comparing a show that comes out in 2019 to a show that couldn't even handle its own premise of sentient soda can waifus properly, that is a real cause for concern.
Yeah. And you know, you could look at this on paper, the cast list and see the preview and look at pictures. And you I could see you thinking to yourself optimistically, like, okay, what the show is going to try to do is, like, normalize these kinds of folks by inserting them into this story and, like, just having them be themselves and be kind of a normal part of the furniture of the world and be have redeeming qualities and be quite useful. Right off the bat, the straight man comedy with Watson, like, it really undercuts that. If that's what they're trying to do, it makes me think that's not what they're trying to do.
And indeed, this is a thing that I've just realized, where I've just realized that the animators and the sound designers of this show are actually, I'd argue, at war with the script and the way it's written. Because there's a lot of love being poured into the visuals here. You've got, like, you know, all the neon of Kabuchiko, and it looks fantastic. You've got the moody jazz soundtrack. The opening, before we get, like, a proper introduction to Watson, where it's quick cuts of, like, you know, the smoking the cigar and all that, and seeing the lady, you know, in the hotel room. Like, it's a really strong opening for a show that doesn't actually exist, unfortunately. But, like, it gives us the idea of, like, a really moody, like, noir piece. It's great. And it's clear that, like, the people who are designing this have a lot of affection for the environment. And potentially the people, I suppose, even though they're presented, like, you know, in the way they are. And so when you've got that, where, like, oh, look at how, like, moody and, like, atmospheric this place is. This, like, place of danger and darkness, but also of neon lights and, you know, unusual folk. And then you've got that, and you've got, oh, all trans women want to do is just, like, you know, violate the personal space of cishet men.
Yeah, grab asses.
Great. Yeah.
Yeah.
Fucking brilliant. I don't get this show right now. I mean, we're only one episode in. I don't hate it. I'm just alarmed by it. And I'm also, again, just asking, like, we're one episode in. I should have a very strong idea of what this show is meant to be about at this point. You'd think,
yeah,
but I don't. Well, I mean, the Jack the Ripper mystery, like, that is in the background, is merely that. We don't even, like, you know, you'd think, like, you know, we'd get some more development of that at the end. Like, well, you know, Jack's a slight swirling as much. I was like, well, they fell for that bait, didn't they? But, like, there's nothing, like, that to me feels like it's going to connect this one to the next, this episode to the next one.
So,
and that could be fine. That could be fine, because you can have, like, one-off episodes where it's like, here's a new case each time, like House,
right? Right. So I'm of the mind that I think the aboutness question, like, and we're only one episode in, so who the fuck knows? But the feel I get at the moment is this is very much just pulpy, throwaway, fun entertainment. Like, it's not meant to be, like, about anything like, really significant in terms of themes and message. Which is always, like, you know, that's the kind of stuff that I enjoy in my entertainment. That's the kind of things that I look for and gravitate to. But I can roll with a good, like, just kind of half hour of entertainment. And again, I do think this show, like you said, it's not a total write-off. The episode has strengths. The Rakugo being a real strength.
Yeah, that was pretty good. We'll get to that moment, but I want to mention that one of the things that it does is we get to see the actual crime being solved by, like, looking at details. Like, we get to see Sherlock do his stuff, like, you know, pay attention to detail. So it is handling that well enough. I do think that, you know, like, the OP, like, as much as I liked it, shock as it was, it might have wanted to labor on details a little more, and maybe it would have been nice if we got to see the actual murderer, like, in the background once or twice, so, rather than just, oh, here he is all along. Like, I think part of the appeal of a good mystery to me is that the answer should always be right in front of you. And you could potentially get ahead of that on them. I mean, this is what we were like, it was like when I was watching Erased. I had questions every single week I was watching that show.
The best mystery ever.
Yeah!
I loved, like, that show.
Like, yeah, like, that to me, like, is the thing that, like, keeps you going. Because you want to, like, try and figure out the details of the crime. You know, you play along at home, so to speak.
Yeah. You just love those characters. You just, oh, you really got invested in those kids.
And then he got saved and the show just kind of went a bit limp.
Yeah. It did not finish as strong as it could have otherwise. But that is a connection that we certainly don't have established here yet, despite characters like Moriarty and a couple of the others. I kind of like, despite the fucking shitty joke we talked about, I kind of like Neat Freak Detective as someone that loses to Holmes regularly. Some of them I could see potentially likable, but no one as of yet really jumps out at me as you know, here's my boy, or here's my girl. Like, so...
I mean, the episode treats this entire thing, this entire affair, as something that just feels like business as usual for these guys.
And yeah.
Here's the thing, right? There are two ways you could do that in a story. Either A, you address that business as usual nature head on through the perspective of a different character, like Watson, which it doesn't fucking do, or you don't treat it as business as usual. You treat the thing as seriously as it should be treated. And it doesn't do either of those. So it not only, like, if I said, like, you know, that I find the content questionable in terms of, like, you know, whether or not it's necessary to depict such a graphic act happening to a woman for reasons. I mean, like, beyond just that, like, if the show itself is going to say, well, it's just business as usual for these boys, that doesn't exactly excite me.
Right. Right. Well, maybe they have to, like, lay this foundation to get to the real, like, oh, shit, it's not business as usual anymore, motherfuckers.
Jack the Ripper's going to rip.
He's really Jack this time.
Oh, for man. Realsies. Jack's back. Oh, I'm bringing back that meme.
Oh, man. Oh, great. Jack the Ripper is a Fate character, by the way. Did you know this?
I also believe that Jack the Ripper in Fate is like a 13-year-old, like,
or possibly younger.
Great.
A little girl. Yeah, very much a tiny
girl.
Great.
Yeah. Nice one, type move.
Assassin.
What a surprise. What a surprise. I mean, I didn't think he blew up, like, you know, balloon animals or something.
Jack the Ripper is also in Nobunaga, which is another historical mashup that's sort of not as, like, doesn't really take itself as seriously as Fate does. Anyway, Jack the Ripper in anime. It's a thing.
Yeah. All right. Look, Rakugo? I'll just let... Rakugo? Oh, yes, let's talk about Rakugo. Okay. This is one of the things I really like about the show, actually. Like, one of the few things, because it feels like a refreshing twist on what I personally have experienced of the Holmes character thus far. Like, okay, we're actually bringing Holmes over to Japan. Like, you know, he's clearly a Japanese gentleman. Let's actually do something with that.
Yeah.
Where we get to see him, like, you know, work through the process, go through his inductive and deductive reasoning through theater.
The scene itself
was animated really well.
It really was. Just briefly, in case there's anyone who doesn't know, I certainly was introduced to this through Rakugo Shinju, is it Shinjo? I think it might be Shinjo. Anyway.
I haven't seen it either way, which makes me a terrible person.
Oh, it's very good. And I haven't even seen the second season, and I can tell you it's very good. But yeah, that anime, the 2016/2017 smash hit banger of a show, Rakugo Shinjo. I was introduced to this, I think a lot of anime fans would have been, but there are some who are newer to fandom or just skipped the show and they're like, what is Rakugo? So Rakugo is kind of an old Japanese theater type. It's like a one-man show. It means fallen words in Japanese. And there's, again, since it's a one-man show, there's a single storyteller that sits on a stage, has a very limited number of props, and tells a long story with multiple characters, multiple points of view that they kind of do impressions, do different voices for. And the stories can be very sort of melancholic or sentimental, or they can be comedies. And so... Holmes uses this form of theater, like you said, to work through publicly his deductions. So you don't have him sitting in like a parlor room smoking a pipe just talking to Watson. It's less dry, there's more visual flair, and as you said, it's a really nice touch because Holmes is Japanese, and he's a very traditional sort of fellow. So it makes sense.
It feels like one of the times that, like, I mean, this is set, like, in Kabuchiko, so you think that they would be celebrating that, or, you know, that districts of Shinjuku, like, you know, they would, like, be using it in a positive way. Not to say that they should shave off all its warts and all that, of course. I mean, sex work is incredibly dangerous and, you know, can be quite degrading work depending on how it goes for you, but like, this is one of the things where it feels like, you know, the text and the animators are in agreement in this episode where, you know what, we are going to do a different twist on Holmes through, like, you know, having him do Rakugo to, like, solve this crime, and you know, we're going to back that up with some great animation and sound effects and also voice acting. Credit where it's due, Holmes' voice act, like, goes just like, well, yeah, you know, like, you've got, it's just like very subdued, like, you know, very monotone, like, oh, I see you've got, you know, some bags under your eyes from that plastic surgery you had. You might want to get that checked out. To, well, let me tell you about a crime. Like, he does handle that range really, really well.
Yeah.
So there is actual genuine craft here, and that's certainly the highlight of the episode, and I look forward to seeing more of them as they go along.
There's, like, the, like, smoky paint, like, yes, blasts in the background. It looks so cool. I love that effect.
It looked great.
And I love that, like, they don't kind of cut to take a sort of shortcut to, like, traditional kind of kabuki music when he's doing this. I like that they stick with the mood that they have established, the very modern urban soundtrack and stuff, along with the the cool visuals. Really, they it just sells the scene. And like you said, the voice work, that really came together quite nicely. And that's probably the strongest part of the episode.
Yeah, I should bloody hope it is, given that that's like one of the central selling points of the show. So yeah, if there's one other thing that I will credit the show for, by the way, like, for a first episode, like, I understand that, you know, you might think to yourself, well, enforcing Sherlock, Watson and company wholesale is a way of cutting down on needless exposition. But I have to credit that Watson is not constantly going, well, hi, I'm Watson, I'm from, you know, I'm a doctor from university, you know, like, I was doing this, 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 and this, blah, blah, blah. We get to see Holmes here present himself as he always would do, like, prior to meeting Watson. And it isn't like, you know, it doesn't feel artificial or contrived. We're just kind of dropped in it. And I think that works. Like, it, this is, after all, meant to be an unusual environment, Kabuki show. So it would make sense to have a one of the protagonists be, you know, a POV character who has to soak all of this in and all of its, you know, strangeness, but also, like, wonder and beauty, which is not backed up by the episode's actual, you know, events or the way characters act, annoyingly enough. But I think that at least, you know, like, insofar as not delivering tons and tons of dry exposition and just simply having us roll with it as it goes along and let it develop organically, I think that worked well.
Totally. I'm in agreement. Mm-hmm. I do think Watson, it's hit me. I think he just may rub me the wrong way because he looks like a high school quarterback who just has continued to wear his, like, varsity jacket.
It's like I said to you off castock, like, his chin looks like a cinder block.
It's incredible. It's incredible. He really does look like a high school athlete grown up. It makes me laugh. But, yeah. I don't know. So is there anything else to say about this episode? We talked about how great the music was. We talked about a lot of the down points. We talked about the Rakugo, the what the fuck moment at the end. I don't know. What else is there to cover? Did we leave anything out?
I'm just waiting for the episode where Sherlock and, like, tiny little 12-year-old pickpocket Moriarty have a wrestling match in front of what's going to be a water slide, and that's going to be their tribute to Reichenbach Falls. Oh, boy, I can't wait to see that shit.
Will he remain a good guy, right? Will he remain on the side of Sherlock? That'll be interesting to see. He also has a cool fashion sense, I feel. Mm-hmm. He has a nice jacket thing and some it's not a sort of pants jacket combo that I would pick for myself, but Moriarty pulls it off well enough.
Yeah. Well, I'm gonna lead off by with two things. First off, I'm gonna say that, folks listening at home, right, if you've only just watched the first episode at this point, or indeed any of the episodes for Kabuchiko, and you've got your own thoughts on what it's actually about that I may very well have missed, tell me. I'd like to know. I'd like more perspectives on this, because me saying here right now, it's episode one, I don't get it, why is this show here, what is it trying to be about, that's not gospel, and I don't want it to be treated as such. I'd rather, you know, have a bit of a conversation around of what they're trying to accomplish here. I mean, I disagree with this, for example, but I remember someone saying to me once that, you know, Perennial Snooze Fest Aka 13 was a healing anime, and you know what? Not a sentiment I agree with personally, but I appreciate nonetheless that there's a different perspective on that of how someone might view it. So keep those coming. Give me some thoughts on this as to what the show might be about.
Yeah, I only double down on that. Let me emphasize that, because this is the anime that has won the poll, and you've heard, you know, you've heard our takes on episode one, and you know, I think probably a lot of the stuff that we didn't like will remain. If I had to guess, if I had to put money on it, so you'll probably be hearing about it. So you know, give us some other directions to go in, some other push back on us here if you want to, if you think that there's, like you said, something we're missing, something we're not taking into account. And I don't know, do you feel like that since this show won the poll, this is the show that we definitely need to stick with here all the way through?
If you're asking me that question,
I am asking you, and I'm asking the patrons also.
Well, firstly, I have seen enough stupid anime shit in my lifetime to know that I will not duck out. I don't tap out easily. But secondly, first off, I think it behooves us to, you know, cover what people have asked for, because we are a democracy funded by our lovely patrons.
So true.
Thirdly, we, you know, often, as of late, have covered a lot of really good shows, and that's good. Like, I don't mind covering a good show. I mean, what kind of madness do you think it would be if I said I was like, oh God, I hate covering this great
show.
It's too good show.
Another life-changing piece of media? God.
Yeah. And you know what, right? As small as our audience currently is, relatively speaking, you know, as like our voices aren't out there such, I don't think it behooves us to walk away from something that's bad and not, you know, go through it all in full, in all of its fullness. Because either A, it can become better, or B, it remains bad. And just because it is bad and it's got question marks doesn't mean we shouldn't then challenge it on it week on week.
Yeah, that's totally fair. Chime in also. Let us know if you have opinions on that. And like Shadan said, help us form a conversation around the show and talk about what you want to talk about in it.
So we have a Patreon question, by the way. This comes from Kate Rose. Can you talk about your expectations for the show before you saw the first episode, and how did those change once you saw the episode? Well, we've covered the show in fairly exhaustive detail at this point on the issues we've had with it. For me, when I watched the trailer, apart from like certain alarm bells ringing about depiction of Miss Hudson, I thought, right, we've got a kind of like, you know, I say sleazy here, but I mean that in the best way possible. Like, you know, sleazy, kind of like, you know, moody, noir, like, you know, detective story. We've got, like, you know, a classic character from Western fiction being implemented here, but with his own unique twist on it. And it's going to be, you know, moody and noir and all that. And as for how I feel now, I genuinely don't know what this show is, what it's trying to do. Because if it's being comedic, I mean, I understand, like, you know, humor is, like, culture and all that, but you know, Sherlock getting woke on a woman, I don't know. Really?
Don't bring your Western politics into animation on.
And
keep,
you know,
that to yourself.
Oh, look at that. Watson's gonna have to let Sherlock pee into a cup at the end. Isn't that funny? Okay, I guess. I mean,
hearing you talk about it is funny.
I mean, like, jokes to me, like, need more craft to them than that, rather than just, oh, I'm not having a man touch my balls, you know? I mean, pee is stored in the balls, as we know, but, you know, we can do better than that as far as crafting a solid joke goes.
Can we?
Hey, I've seen plenty of great funny shows where they have good build-ups to, like, actual solid jokes, like, welcome to CHK. Oh, right, you know, like, Sasso's, like, read, I can't remember her name because I've not seen the show, so like, he's read like her intent on trying to psychoanalyze him, so he starts throwing all this sexual imagery, and she's just then furiously flicking through the books to interpret it, and of course she goes scarlet red at the end of it. But it's a build up to a good joke, like, it's crafted, it gives us insight into the characters, as opposed to this, which is pee in this cup, Sherlock, you old man. I'm like, cool, I guess.
Yeah,
okay. I mean, I have to say, right, for the first episode, by the way, you'd think this would have established that they're now, like, you know, going to hang out together. Because indeed, in Study in Scarlet, Holmes and Watson actually end up, like, renting the Baker Street together. Because he finds, like, he's referred on by one of his, Watson is referred on by one of his friends when he gets back from the war. Like, that's how they meet and how they end up living together. It establishes that and the first case that they cover collectively. If I have got no concrete evidence from the way this episode ends that that is going to be the case here, like they're going to continue hanging out. For all we know, Watson could just be on his way after he's helped Sherlock with his, you know, urinary issues.
He'll probably feel indebted to him, right? I mean, he helped him get his money back, and then he hit him with a car.
Yeah, that does tend to, you know, require a, you know...
And he also wants him to solve his own case, which mm-hmm. Sherlock never has agreed to yet, but I figure that's why he'll stick around.
Of what? Why he's in the show?
What did he say? Like, there's not a murder, but weird things keep happening to me. You know, like I've ended up in this anime.
Like instance. How trans people have cuties.
I'm around trans people all the time. Please solve this for me. I don't understand why it's happening. Well, look. We've gotten a lot of this out of our system, and I mean, I feel like unless, I don't know, maybe I'll walk this back. Unless the show goes even farther, like, we probably don't need to spend as much time every single week kind of enumerating its sins, because I feel like it's just gonna do this every week, you know? And it's going to suck.
we will find out, folks. We'll give it a go.
Yeah.
But yeah, if you do want to ask us questions about the show as we cover it.
I didn't answer the question. I didn't answer Kat Rose's question. Kate Rose, apologies. Sorry about that, Kate. Well, seeing a PV doesn't really kind of mess with my expectations too much. I've really trained myself over the years to, in terms of anime, usually... to not expect anything, unless it's like associated with a franchise I already know and like if a new Macross came out, or like, I don't know, a bunch of people were like, this manga was so good, I'd be like, okay, I'll check this anime out. I don't even have to really see the preview, I just expect it to be good. This one, not really being attached to anything or having any recommendations, I didn't have a ton of expectations right off the gate, but as I alluded to at the beginning, you know, I just kept hearing over the course of the week how sort of transphobic the show was, and queer phobia, and, you know, you see the images of the drag queens and or transgender folks, and it got me ready for this. Like I said, I was able to compartmentalize that and then try to see if there were any other redeeming aspects of the show apart from it. I didn't really get blindsided by it. I was ready for that. And as I said, mystery is not really my thing. So my expectations were pretty low. So for me, the everything else portion of the show was mostly fun. Like I said, I think all told, I had a fun time. But there are just a lot of problems and a lot of question marks that will, you know, I guess work themselves out over time.
Mm-hmm. I again just have to ask though, like, if this is the setting you want to put your Sherlock story in, why do you not seem to like it all that much? Like, why do you frame it in these ways?
Because it's curious. Comedy.
Ha ha. Ha ha.
It's
ha.
Comedy.
Yes, I laughed so hard I passed out and there was just blood on the floor everywhere. And it poured all out of my nose. And there was also a gun in my hand. I don't know how that got there.
Just so, don't be morbid. Don't be so morbid.
Anyway, yes, if you do want to get involved, you know, ask us questions about Kabuchiko Sherlock as we cover it, feel free to, become a patron for as little as $2 a month. If you go up to $3 or more, you'll be able to ask questions for us. You can even get access to early episodes like the upcoming Tokyo Godfathers podcast. I'm currently doing. You'll also get access to the aforementioned Akikan podcast, which is still sat there for patron only. Oh boy.
Yeah.
You get to that's where I really cut loose on that one, folks. So if you enjoyed, you know, me, you know, sharpening my knives and like carving into this roast beast here, then you might want to check that one out as well. And there's also plenty of other benefits. You have a Discord, of course. You get to request a show for us to cover. All sorts of great stuff. So definitely give it a look-see. If, on the other hand, however, you're catching this further down the line and you're, you know, listening to past me as opposed to present me, you know, probably catch it on YouTube or iTunes or SoundCloud or, you know, maybe at your local, you know, theatre or on the jukebox at your local pub. Okay, maybe not so much. Do feel free to, you know, give us a like, a subscribe, you know, give us a nod on that because it really helps our discoverability. We always appreciate, you know, constructive feedback from patrons or non-patrons as well. So feel free to, again, offer your thoughts on this show to us and, like, offer some perspectives that we might have missed because, you know, we're always willing to be educated here. And yeah, that otherwise, I believe, brings us to the end of Second Stream, Episode 1, Kabuchiko Sherlock, Case File 221, Paragraph 7, Substat, blah, 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 blah. From me and Doc, we'll say now that we will, of course, be back with Kabuchiko Sherlock, Episode 2, Subparagraph, blah, 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 blah. That'll be next week. And as I say, like, you know what? I'm curious, like, about this show's purpose. But having seen so many bad things in my life and seeing also some of the good stuff that's in this, I'm willing to stick with it. I want to give it a fair chance to, shake its own, you know, own issues.
Tail feather.
I mean, yeah. I mean, what's, like, just to leave it on this note, right? Like, all of the things I've said that I don't like, I mean, I don't obviously like transphobia or queerphobia anyway. Like, you know, don't do that shit, folks. It's not fucking difficult to use someone's preferred pronouns. It really isn't. If you can stop yourself from swearing on the phone in customer service, you can do that as well. That being said, I am not against their inclusion to serve a narrative purpose. We do no one any benefit by pretending these things don't exist, by not writing stories in which characters do act transphobic or queerphobic. The key here that I want you all to think about, though, is, as I've said in other like works we've covered, like, what is the purpose of the queerphobia or the transphobia in any given work where it appears? Is it then something that is ridiculed, you know, torn down, you know, deconstructed, revealed for the fallacy and the false way of thinking that it is? Or is it intrinsic to the work itself? Is it, like, you know, the framework upon which the show hangs upon and, like, you know, all the way down to its bones, like, permeates it to the core? The problem I have with Sherlock is not that it has transphobic or queerphobic elements in it simply because they exist. My problem is that it falls into the latter category I just mentioned there, where it seems more encoded into the show just because as a kind of bleed over from its creators and their own viewpoints. I mean, you know, oh, this work is a work of fiction and doesn't reflect the author's views. That's bullshit. That'll protect you in a court of law, but it will not protect you from me to give you shit for it.
Yeah, it does really feel endorsed. And like you said, as part of the show's DNA, you know, the character designer for the show was actually also the character designer in the Persona 5 OAV. And, well,
oh no,
speaking of queerphobia, you know, it, I don't know if it was in the OAV or not, but we love to talk about that scene from Persona 5. And it's also, you know, again, when we talk about that, we say, like, okay, like, characters could have these bigoted beliefs in a story, and then you can use that for some purpose or whatever. But, like, when queer characters themselves are stereotyped and laughed at, and the phobia is the joke, like, what does that serve? And that's just, you know, connections between P5, that crappy incident in the red light district there, and Kabuchiko in this show.
Mm-hmm.
Character designer is the connecting thread.
I wish Satoshi Kon was still alive, because if he was doing this show, he would utterly knock it out of the park.
We miss you
indeed. But that's why I say, like, you know, that I don't think the premise is inviolate. I think that there's plenty of ideas that could be brought around here. And similarly, Watts himself and his own reactions, plus all the other characters, they could dial that back over the course of the show's run. Doesn't even need to necessarily be something, like, you know, apparent, but more like, hey, you know, like, I'm just used to it now. Like,
Miss Hudson, you know, you're all right.
Yeah. You know, that kind of thing. Who can
but
say?
But the problem, and see, it's hard, though, because it's both, like, it will be one thing if Watson, I know we're extending this shit as we said we're about to sign off, but it would be one thing if Watson was, like, you know, queerphobic, and then the drag queens and or trans folks didn't, you know, grab his ass and shit. But, like, you don't want to be like, all right, Watson, you need to be cool with having your ass grabbed by people, because that's not okay. But the thing is, like, you know, if he backs off of it, like, he's like, oh, I'm endorsing, like, having my boundaries crossed just because it's an LGBTQ person. No, like, you have to pull back from both sides. Like,
I probably should have mentioned that. I apologize that I wasn't quite so clear. But what I'm trying to say, essentially, is that, like, you know, we're not at the end of the show. We're at the start, and there is still possibility, you know, of it tapering back on these problematic elements, even if it's not necessarily, like, an overt thing where it's, like, a critical analysis, like, a look at itself. You know, we'll see. We will see. But yeah, thank you everyone for listening. As I say, if you do want to get involved, consider looking at our Patreon, look at our YouTube, look at our SoundCloud. We'll be back next week with Kabuchiko Sherlock Episode 2. Yeah. I've been Shaden, and you know, it's been Dr. Cecil Watson over there, you know, helping me out on this rather difficult case. I don't feel we quite cracked it yet, but I do believe with a bit more, you know, deep analysis, we might come to the conclusion that satisfies everyone about Kabuchiko Sherlock. So,
by Jove, I think you've done it.
I think I have, actually, with that voice. So on that note, a very good night, everyone. And as always, embrace each other to the ends of the universe. All the best.
Mwah. Good night.